Chapter 27. The road trip was for me and Skippy, no one else. With our crew barely large enough for the mission, I didn't want to risk additional people. Skippy had suggested we put him in the Falcon and remotely pilot it for him, but he also suggested the Dutchman jump away to be safe, so the signal lag would be too great for effective remote piloting of the Falcon. Plus, he did not know what he would find out there, and wanted my monkey brain with him in case he encountered something dangerous. I was touched by his concern for me. The road trip was not an epic long weekend. It involved only a 3-hour flight in the Falcon, although I had to endure sustained 4G thrust to get moving, then 3 times Earth's gravity to slow down near the target. What was the target? Skippy did not know, or he wasn't sure. He thought it could be an active comm node, because something out there had a connection to higher space-time, and the obvious candidate, given the weakness of the connection, was an Elder Communications node on standby or operating at low power. The Dutchman's sensors had not detected anything, which annoyed Nagatha and threw her into a funk because she had not been kept in the loop by Skippy. The Beacon explained that he had been concentrating his attention on the moon and only gave surrounding space a cursory scan until he picked up something unusual. Scattered debris from another Elder starship, this one in an elliptical orbit that took it far from the moon. At first, even the discovery of a third Elder ship did not spark his curiosity into overdrive. He already knew there had been a battle in the area, and the exact number of ships involved was not very important. Then he did look more closely at the third ship. Or, actually, one of his submines got bored with composing songs to mock the great Skippy and decided to look at the data. What it found did get Skippy's full attention. "Joe, that third ship was Elder tech of a different design, slightly more advanced. The technology is merely an interesting data point, and I would eventually have archived it. But I found another anomaly. The third ship was destroyed much later, much more recently, like around the time that Newark was thrown out of orbit." "Oh, shit." "Yep, that's what I said. There were 2 space battles here, both involving Elder ships?" "Apparently, yes. Battles many millions of years apart. Another fun fact, if you're interested, is some of the damage to that Elder site happened around the time the third ship was destroyed. It looks like someone came back a long time later to finish the job of erasing evidence of the Elder presence in this star system. This signal of whatever you're tracking, it's from wreckage of the Elder third ship?" "I think so, because the object is in a similar elliptical orbit." "Just the one object? You didn't find any big pieces of the third ship? Something we might be able to use?" "No, destruction of that ship was violent and complete. To be honest, I am not detecting an object at all. What I do know is something out there has an active connection to higher space-time. The connection is weak and intermittent. That leads me to believe that comm node is damaged." "Comm node or whatever else it is, you don't know it's a comm node for sure." "True. However, I do not know what else it could be." Given Skippy's inability to think outside the box, I was not comforted by his not being able to imagine what could be out there. "Ah, hell, we'll find out," and I checked the console. 42 minutes. I was wrong about the 42-minute timeline. Not wrong about the navigation. I had no illusion about being a great pilot, but plotting a course to where Skippy wanted to go in empty space was fairly simple math, even for me. To get to the object quickly, I planned a 3G deceleration to bring us to a halt relative to the unseen object at a distance of 100,000 kilometers, a nice round number that Skippy thought would be super conservative for safety. Once we were stationary relative to whatever it was, Skippy would scan it with his own sensors. Then I could move us closer, slowly and carefully. The only possible problem would be the Falcon's engines cutting out before we finished canceling our velocity, leaving us to go shooting past the thing. That is sort of what happened. The Falcon's engines did cut off prematurely when we were 19,000 kilometers from where I wanted to stop, except I did not screw up, nor was there a mechanical problem with our Theranin dropship.
"Huh. That's weird," Skippy muttered.
My focus was on the instruments and on breathing deep and even to counteract the extra weight on my chest from the deceleration.
"Weird is not good," I grunted in a hoarse voice. "What is it?"
My left index finger hovered over a button that would engage an abort course, flipping the Falcon 90 degrees and going to 8 Gs to get us out of there.
"It looks like you were right. It is not a communications node. It must be some type of equipment that survived destruction of the ship. Something that...
he continued stuttering nonsense like that, his voice cutting in and out. With my helmet sealed, he was talking through my earpiece, and I shook my head, wondering if the creepy-like spider thing had fallen out. "Skippy, you're breaking up." I expected he would complain about how stupid and clumsy monkeys are. "What did you say?"
"Get out of here!"
he shouted clearly, and my finger flexed to engage the abort course. A choking sensation woke me up, that and needing to sneeze. When I opened my eyes, I almost wished I hadn't. I was tumbling head over heels so fast the starfield was going by with nausea-inducing speed. A feature of Krestang flight suit faceplates is they go clear when power is cut off, and my suit was completely dead, which was why I felt like I was suffocating. I was suffocating. The oxygen recycler was offline, along with everything else. Where the hell was the Falcon? I remember being in the left-hand pilot couch of a Falcon and Skippy shouting a warning, then nothing. Okay, first I manually got the emergency oxygen supply started, and in moments, blessedly sweet, clean oxygen was blowing from a vent in my helmet. Taking a deep breath made me sneeze, an unfortunate event because the static field inside the faceplate was offline. Also, with a helmet on, I could not squeeze my nose or do anything other than scrunch up my lip to suppress another sneeze. It worked well enough. "Skippy," I called. There was no answer. "Skippy," I called out louder, as if that would help in space. Even with the flight suit dead, I should be able to hear him through my earpiece. Except what was that thing bouncing off the upper right corner of the faceplate? Crap, it was the earpiece. It must have come loose and floated out of my ear. That should not ever happen. The thing must be dead. What the hell was going on? Then I got another shock. Something was banging against my waist and shoulders. Feeling around with the non-powered arms of my suit, I realized I was still strapped into the pilot couch, or part of the pilot couch. The straps were fancy nanotech fibers that adjusted automatically. They also had a manual release mechanism that I fumbled with until I got the straps loose. The broken couch floated away, giving me a glimpse of it as I flipped head over heels. It was not only broken. To me, it appeared to have been severed cleanly from the Falcon, sliced away by something. Had the Dutchman's crew cut the couch away from the dropship to rescue me? If so, where were they? And why was I tumbling out of control in a dead flight suit? And where was the rest of the Dragon? Most importantly, where was Skippy? Without any sort of clock, I had no idea how much time had passed since I turned on the emergency oxygen flow. Spinning so rapidly made blood pool in my head, giving me a headache and making me dizzy. It was a toss-up which would make me more nauseous, keeping my eyes closed so my inner ears had no frame of reference, or opening my eyes and watching the stars spin past. Whatever happened, I could not get sick in my helmet or I would risk clogging the air vents. Since first going into zero gravity aboard a Krestang troop transport at the space elevator above Ecuador, I'd gotten space sick 3 times. None of those incidents were recent. NASA astronauts sometimes got over initial space sickness, but sometimes people who had completed several space missions could suddenly be stricken by nausea in zero gravity. Fortunately, I had eaten a small and bland breakfast of oatmeal and toast, partly because I had been nervous about going down to the Elder site, and partly because I was too lazy to make anything else. By flashing my eyes open and shut quickly, I determined nothing had changed. The local star was still flashing past regularly as I tumbled. Fortunately, the star was off to my left and not shining directly into my eyes. That would have been... Wait. Something was different. There was another star out there, a bright one. And it was getting closer. Trying to watch had me on the verge of Ralphing in my helmet, so I shut my eyes and waited. If the approaching bright object was hostile, there was nothing I could do about it. Part of me was hoping the light was a missile, because a quick death was preferable to what would happen when my oxygen ran out. Something slammed into me, and my arms were encased in a vice-like grip. Instinctively, I tried to flail my arms, but in an unpowered suit, there was no chance I could break away. "I got you. I got you. I got you," a muffled voice announced through helmet-to-helmet contact. "Pool?" I was so relieved I opened my eyes and regretted it. With Pool's mass attached to my own, we were now wobbling about all 3 axes, and my brain was rattling in my skull. "Is that you?"
"Yes."
Her voice was strained. She must be struggling with nausea like I was.
"Relax, sir."
The light I had seen was Captain Poole in a jetpack coming to latch onto me. I got the full story from Skippy later, after Poole got me aboard a dropship and we flew off to recover Skippy. It took both of us a while to recover from having our brains tossed around as the jetpack worked to stabilize our wild tumbling. Holding his beer can in my hands, I was surprised to see a slight discoloration of his previous uniformly shiny silver surface. "Skippy." I strapped him securely to a seat and gave Porter and Edwards the signal to fly us back to the Dutchman. "What the hell was that?" "It was an AI, Joe. I'm sorry." "An AI?" When I heard AI, I immediately thought of the artificial intelligences at the Bosphorak moon base, in the Maxalt's relay station, and in the Pixie factory. "Oh," I gasped when realization hit me. "Yeah. An elder AI."
"Like you?"
"Close enough." "Sorry, Joe, I screwed up. It never crossed my mind that signal I detected was the local space-time connection of an AI like me. My connection is much stronger, like orders of magnitude stronger, and also much quieter. If that AI had been fully functional like me, I could not have detected it unless it shouted and waved its arms." "Had been functional? It's gone now." "Wait, no one briefed you on what happened?" "No, Skippy." I shook my head and regretted that action. "I have a massive headache. Plus, when I got aboard the dropship, I couldn't help Ralphin." Poole had actually beat me to the Falcon's tiny bathroom to puke in the proper receptacle. I used my helmet. Then I passed out, being revived only to lose what was left in my stomach.
"We thought you were dead, sir," Poole explained, rubbing her very pale face with a towel.
"The explosion. It was like a tactical nuke."
"Not quite," Skippy corrected.
"But it was a massive explosion, that is true."
"Could someone please explain what happened?" I pleaded.
"Where is the Falcon I was flying?"
"The Falcon is gone, Joe. That AI was insane, Joe. Damaged and insane. Also, it was not self-aware, and I think that unlike me, it was never sapient, or sentient, if you prefer that term. It attacked without warning as soon as we were within its effective radius, and I was totally unprepared. Most of the energy thrown at us was absorbed by me and channeled into another space-time, but the Falcon's mass was converted to subatomic particles. You are alive because I created a space-time bubble around us to protect you. Then I had to release you so I could fight back. That AI used tactics and capabilities I did not know were possible. I still do not understand most of the technology it employed against us. Against me, really. You and the Falcon were collateral damage."
Thanks for saving my life. You know, again. You are very welcome." He missed a golden opportunity to boast about himself. That told me more than his words did about how shaken up he was. "My fault for poking my nose into dark, scary places."
"You said this AI was insane. You think that because it attacked you?"
"No, the attack implies hostility, not insanity. It was babbling, Joe, completely incoherent. The attack was also incoherent. It could have destroyed me right away, but the energies and space-time distortions it used were unfocused, and it seemed to lose track of me or forget about me halfway through. That AI was totally bonkers, Joe. Its poor control over itself allowed me to recover, protect myself and you, and consolidate my own resources to strike back. The whole incident took less than 2 seconds in meat sack time, an eternity in my time."
"How did you beat it?"
"At first, I tried to activate the computer worm that I found inside it, although that was desperation on my part. The worm should have killed that thing back when it went insane, so I did not have high hopes for Mr. Wormy to come to my rescue. There was no response. Either the worm was also damaged, or the corrupted matrix of the AI rendered it immune to the worm. Anyway, while the AI forgot about me and was randomly creating rips in space-time, I was able to feed part of its energy back on itself and, well, I kinda made it destroy itself. That was the explosion. It lost containment."
Hearing that disappointed and confused me.
"It lost containment with less force than a tactical nuke?
Ah, you are thinking loss of containment should have been a planet-shattering event? That would be true if the AI had been near a planet or moon. It lost containment in empty space, so there was little mass in the area to convert into energy. Also, its connection to higher space-time was already weak and tenuous, so only a minor part of the AI's true self came through the connection. Our presence here in local space-time is mostly sort of an anchor, so we can act effectively here, Joe. By our, I mean AIs like me.
Yeah, I got that.
Hell, Skippy, what do we do now?
I recommend we make like a shepherd and get the flock out of here, he declared without a trace of humor.
Working on it, sir, Edwards reported from the co-pilot seat. ETA at the Dutchman is 15 minutes.
It had taken me 3 hours to fly from the ship to where the insane AI attacked, but now we could get back in less than half an hour?
That's quick, I remarked.
Colonel Sims jumped the ship in soon as we received Skippy's signal, Porter explained from the pilot seat. Most of the delay in rendezvousing with you is because the explosion blew you backwards at 17,000 kph.
He shook his head.
I don't know how it didn't kill you.
I had a beer can looking out for me.
I shuddered involuntarily. When we got back to the ship, I was going to need sleep, and I wasn't getting it until the ship had safely jumped away.
Skippy takes things way too literally sometimes. After being treated for my injuries by Mad Dr. Skippy, I was still sleeping at 0900 hours when I was awakened by a commotion in the passageway outside my door and by my Z-phone beeping with a message from Sims. "You need to see this," the message read. I instantly shot out of bed, whacking my head on the overhead cabinet for the 1,000th freaking time. As I rubbed my head and swung my feet to the floor, I noticed Sims had added a winking emoji to the end of a message.
What the hell?
Dressing quickly, I got a shirt, pants, and boots on and slapped the button to open the door. Before I saw the source of the commotion, I heard it. Whether it was intentional or not, the voice sounded like it was talking over one of those tinny, low-fidelity speakers you hear at summer camp or in a big store, because it was like someone talking from the bottom of a well.
Vote for Skippy. Skippy means progress. A vote for Skippy is a vote for success.
Then it came around a corner and got louder. It was a familiar bot that rolled on treads, a bot I had seen performing cleaning or routine maintenance chores around the ship. On top, instead of cleaning attachments, were two speakers and a big poster of Lord Admiral Skippy smiling and looking calm and confident.
S-K-I-P-P-Y stands for success, kindness, integrity, prosperity, and, something else that starts with the letter P. Crap. Progress. Yeah, progress. And the Y is for yes, we can. Vote for Skippy.
I stood in front of the bot, waving my arms and forcing it to grind to a halt.
What the hell is this?
His avatar appeared, floating in the air at my eye level. Joe, it would violate my well-known and documented integrity to speak with my opponent outside of a scheduled debate. Please save your questions for
documented?
Your integrity? You're talking about the Skippy who screws with us just for amusement.
Exactly, Joe. People know I am an asshole, so when I act like an asshole, I am acting with the integrity people expect.
You get a pass for being an asshole. I spoke slowly because my brain was processing his statement.
Because you admit you're an asshole?
Exactly. I don't make the social rules you monkeys follow, Joe. I just take advantage of them for my benefit. I mean, I adhere to social conventions or some bullshit like that, whatever.
See, you pretend to be a super nice guy, so when you do anything even remotely not perfect, people say, aha, I knew he was a phony jerk.
I am much more honest because I tell people up front that I think your entire species is a woefully underdeveloped, ignorant collection of disorganized chemicals, and people love me.
I actually cannot argue with you about that.
Joe, to be fair, we really should wait for the debate before we talk.
Debate? What debate? What is this? You're running for election as what, supreme asshole?
No, Joe, please, try to keep up with current events, huh?
I am running for your job. You know, captain of the ship, commander of the mission, all that.
What? This is not a democracy.
Oh, shit.
Damn it. Just then I remember telling the beer can that pirate ship crews often used to choose their officers.
Skippy, I did not mean that thing about pirate democracy literally.
Why not?
He asked like a toddler who had been told he can't have ice cream for breakfast.
Does your authority to command this mission come from UNEF?
No.
From the United Nations at all?
No,
he answered for me.
How about the United States Army? Did they authorize you to lead this mission? This vitally important mission, which so far has been a disorganized, chaotic mess?
You know the answer to that question, Skippy.
I do know the answer, and the crew knows the answer. We are pirates, and the crew has the right to choose their leaders.
Uh-huh. The answer is to put a beer can in charge of making decisions?
Come on, Joe, seriously, could I do any worse than you? We have taken enormous risks already, and still you have no idea how we can stop two Maxalt ships from reaching Earth. This whole mission has been a screw-up right from the start.
Yes. Most of the screw-ups were caused by you. At the moon base, you failed to account for that fighter patrol taken off from the moon base, but you should have known about it from hacking into their comm system. You didn't know the crawler was taking a different route. That is another thing that must have been listed in a database you had access to. You should have known that Smythe's team would make the crawler too heavy to travel its route. You for damn sure should have known power was cut to part of the base. And don't even get me started about your major screw-ups at the Pixie Factory and for nearly getting us killed by an Elder AI. That's just the beginning of...
Ugh! What I hear is blah, 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 Joe is looking for someone to blame. Oh, this is so sad.
Listen, dum-dum. I will admit that some minor mistakes were made if you will admit all the screw-ups happened on your watch. You know how absent-minded I allegedly am.
Allegedly? Minor mistakes? What the hell would you consider a major mistake?
Ugh. His avatar emphasized the sigh with a combination shoulder shrug and folding arms across its chest.
They were all by definition minor because the operations ultimately were successful despite your lack of planning.
Joe, we can cover all these arguments during our campaign debate, but let us not lose sight of the big picture. We are out here on this most desperate of missions because you failed to consider the long-term effects of ordering me to screw with Elder Wormholes. Can you argue with that?
No. I sulked like a kid who had been caught with his hand in the cookie jar.
You are promising mission success if you get elected.
Oh,
he blew a raspberry.
Come on, Joe. Those are campaign promises. You monkeys know such promises are total bullshit, but you vote for the candidates anyway, which proves how deeply stupid you are as a species.
Don't worry, Joe. Once I am elected as supreme leader, there will be a place on my team for you. I will focus on the big picture items like my vision for our future. Although I am not quite sure what this vision thing is, the public seems to want one, so I will need to slap together some bullshit that sounds good. On my team, you can handle the small stuff like strategic planning.
Strategic planning is small stuff?
Details, Joe. He flicked a hand in a dismissive wave.
And speaking of details, you and Smythe had better handle the tactical planning, too. I certainly will not have time for that trivial stuff.
Let me see if I understand this, okay? Under your supreme and benevolent leadership, I will be doing all the things I am doing now while you do...
What, exactly?
I told you I will provide a vision.
Also, I will provide inspiring leadership.
Uh-huh. What happens if another mission goes wrong?
Then, clearly, I will be severely disappointed by the knucklehead my administration relied on for planning. But,
his avatar hopped up and down excitedly,
when a mission is successful, I take all the credit.
Neat, huh? I face-palmed myself and shook my head.
Yeah, neat. I don't make the social rules that govern monkey society, Joe. All I do is manipulate those rules for my benefit.
Hey, maybe that can be my vision.
Yeah, why don't you try that as a campaign slogan?
Good idea.
Wait. I suspect you are trying dirty tricks to sabotage my campaign. Let me tell you why you have no chance in an election against me. For example, in American presidential elections, the winner is usually determined by one simple fact. The taller candidate wins. So, presto!
His avatar grew so its hat was squashed by the ceiling.
I am now much taller than you. Game over.
Oh, the game is over, that is true. There is not going to be an election.
No?
No. I am the commander, and
this is a totally blatant attempt at voter suppression.
His avatar shrunk back to its normal size.
You are just afraid of what will happen. Joe, power to the people.
Oh, for... Okay, go ahead then. Do it. Call a snap election right now. You can do that, right? Tell the crew the vote will be, in 1 hour.
Deal!
Skippy's avatar flashed out of existence, and the bot rolled backwards. A moment later, the bot began its spiel again.
Vote for Skippy. Skippy means progress. A vote for Skippy is a vote for success.
Smythe arched an eyebrow.
Colonel, do you think that is wise? You might be setting a bad precedent to indulge the beer can in this nonsense. Smythe, our crew is still new to being pirates, and we don't know how much longer we'll be out here. It would be useful to know their opinion.
If you think so, sir.
One thing I have learned is to never give an order that won't be obeyed. If this crew doesn't want to follow me,
us, sir, Smythe pointed out correctly.
Follow us. The senior crew is loyal to you because of our long experience under your leadership.
Point noted, I agreed with a slow nod. Smythe knew a vote of no confidence in me also applied to himself and to Sims.
This crew may already be having second thoughts about defying UNEF and their home countries. The first phase of a long mission is not the best time to ask an inexperienced team to evaluate their leadership.
Colonel Smythe, I have faith this will turn out well.
He looked at me in that way he did on our first mission together, before we rode a stolen RV, then walked what seemed like halfway across Newark to attack a group of Krestang scavengers who thought they were alone on the planet, like a schoolmaster questioning a dim-witted boy.
Faith in the good judgment of the crew?
That too, I guess. I meant I have faith that Skippy will be Skippy.
How so?
Wait, I'd say 10 minutes. My guess was off by 2 minutes. Captain Reed was the first to contact me 8 minutes later.
Colonel, I thought you should know that Skippy is trying to bribe me into voting for him.
I winked at Smythe, who grinned and nodded. Skippy was certainly being Skippy.
Did he offer anything good?
Sir?
Reed had expected me to be outraged, not amused.
Captain, if Skippy offered a good enough bribe, I might vote for him.
Oh, she laughed. He offered to double my rations. I told him we already get more than enough to eat. Next, he said I could join his leadership team as Grand Exalted Most Excellent Chief Pilot, complete with a gaudy new uniform he designed.
Was it a nice uniform?
Sir, it looked like something a drag queen would describe as way over the top. I've never seen so much taffeta. Also, gold is not my best color.
Then he announced that when he is elected, every Friday will be free beer day.
Sir, do we have that much beer aboard?
We don't have any beer, I mused, trying to remember the list Sims reviewed with me.
Luxury items had not yet been loaded aboard the ship when UNEF tried what Skippy described as the wacky stunt of seizing control of the ship. As far as I knew, the entire supply of alcohol aboard consisted of 2 bottles of champagne and 1 bottle of red wine. Maybe the crew had secret stashes tucked away, but it could not amount to much.
So that little fucker lied to me again.
Reed did not sound like she was firmly in the vote for Skippy camp.
Captain, I am sure the beer can would explain his statement was merely a campaign promise, not to be taken literally. Free beer must be part of his vision for leadership or something.
My phone beeped with 4 incoming calls.
Reed, I have other calls.
Sir, you have nothing to worry about. Skippy wrote a campaign song, and he insisted on singing all 4 verses to me. I'd vote against him just for that.
50-something minutes later, I called the beer can.
Oh, Skippy? Do you have the election results yet?
Still have data coming in from outlying precincts, Joe, he muttered.
Outlying? The ship isn't that big.
Come on, your lordship, give me the bad news. When will you be moving into my office?
Why would I...
Oh, yeah, yes, good point.
He was much more cheery.
You'd better start packing your things, Joey, because the election was a landslide.
That is fascinating. Hey, to show you that I'm not a sore loser, how about we get the entire crew together in the galley and confirm the results by voice vote?
I am afraid that would not be a good idea, Joe. I am sad to report there was serious fraud in the voting.
Interesting.
Like what? Like I did not get a single vote! This is an outrage. I demand an investigation.
Would you like a recount?
Already did that, Joe, he grumbled. One guy said he would not vote for me if I was the last sentient being in the universe. That was one of the nicer comments I got from the crew. What a bunch of jerks. Stupid monkeys. This is so unfair.
Clearly the only reason you lost is that monkeys are unforgivably stupid. Your life is a shocking tragedy of insults against your greatness, Skippy.
Maybe the universe simply hates you.
Oh, shut up!